Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 17th. I'm Ray Graff. The official start of winter is Saturday, and some of us have already had our fair share of wintry weather, but it officially begins this weekend, and it's always fun right around the turn of the season to talk to News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselbach, and we will talk weather today with Reed. If you have a question about weather patterns in your area, nor'easters, the polar vortex, the atmospheric river, the bombogenesis, whatever that is, the number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, if you have a weather question, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We are joined today by a familiar voice on these airwaves. It's News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselbach. Radar Reed is the weekday noon meteorologist for WNYT News Channel 13. He joined the News Channel 13 in July 2019 as the weekend evening meteorologist. Before that, Reed began his broadcasting career out in central New York, WKTV in Utica, but he is a Capital Region native and he loves going to area schools and discussing the intricacies of meteorology, which is what we'll do today. If you have a meteorological question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Radar Reed, welcome back. Happy almost winter.
Happy almost winter. Thanks for having me back.
So they got whomped by a pretty big snowstorm down in the southern tier and not so much around the Capital District, but we've had our share, a little snow here and there.
We're pretty close to average at this point. I want to say I looked at the totals earlier. I want to say we're at 9.1 inches for the season so far. And the average by this point is usually 8.9. So okay, we're right where we're supposed to be.
So I think we discussed the last time you were on, the prediction was for what, a La Nina?
Yes.
What does that mean again? Are we going to have, have we seen all the snow we're going to see?
No, we're definitely not done on that front. La Nina is usually wetter conditions for us, but sometimes right in our region, it's a little bit warmer. So it could mean a little bit more of those mixed precipitation events.
All right, so I won't have to shovel is what you're saying.
Not necessarily.
Come on,
There's other factors that go into it, too, like polar vortex and things like that that can impact it. And that's already, we're already looking at that for this weekend of why you would see.
Temperatures are really going to drop. When do you think that will happen?
We get the single digit highs for us. We don't usually get that till around February.
No, but I mean, when is it going to happen this week?
We'll get that single digit lows Saturday night, Sunday night. So we're going to only have highs in the 20s this weekend, just in time for winter.
Just in time for my pipes to freeze and such. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, terrible cyclone in Mayotte, a French, what they call a department, I guess. It's off Madagascar, archipelago. And it got me thinking. I mean, it was devastating, like the hurricanes we have seen around here from time to time or on the East Coast. What is the qualitative difference between a cyclone and a hurricane?
So the difference is it's just based off your ocean, more or less.
So like that's
Atlantic
Ocean
are hurricanes, Indian Ocean is cyclone. And then you get to the Pacific, you hear typhoon a little bit more as of Japan getting hit by some major typhoons. That's where that kind of comes.
Why not just call them one thing? Why?
So they're all technically classified as a cyclone, but you just give the name based off of the basin just to kind of help with differences of naming them. So if you couldn't have like two Alberts at the same time and be Hurricane or Cyclone Albert.
So here, it's all about the name.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it helps along with the data keeping purposes and just keeping it a little bit more clear for public purposes.
If the typhoon or hurricane or whatever is below the equator, does it spin the other way?
It does.
It really does.
Yes.
Why?
It has to do with centrifugal force. It has to do with just the curvature of the earth, the way the winds blow. And so obviously here we have our clock,
counterclockwise. Yeah. Oh, it's counterclockwise
for here. And then they would go clockwise in there.
Very interesting. But the thing about the toilet flushing is not true, right?
No, it is true. That's
it
a thing.
It is true, also. All right, this email came in from, it's going to be one of those shows. The number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a weather question for News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Ellen writes in, I understand the difference between meteorological and astronomical seasons, with one being based on the Earth's position and the other based on temperatures during the year. I'm not sure is that true, but why is there need for both, says Ellen. It seems unnecessarily confusing.
That's a good question by Ellen. I like that one, actually. So, yeah, we have the two different seasons, meteorological and astronomical.
Right.
Astronomical is just when the sun crosses the Earth's equator, and that's where you kind of have the point of knowing what season you're going to be heading into at this point. So we have astronomical for that purpose. We have meteorological, and that's classified. It's broken up into 3 months. So you have your four seasons. So it's 3 months in a season. And that's grouped together by temperatures and kind of precipitation.
So like it really is by temperatures.
It's grouped together. The reason why we have them is it's easier to collect data that way to define it. So we are in meteorological winter for December, January, February, when we get our coldest temperatures, when we get our highest snowfall totals.
December 1st
through March 30, or March, sorry, end of February.
That is, okay.
Spring is March, April, May, and then June, July, August, summer. So it makes sense in regards to, if you go out there, you classify those seasons as those months.
All right, well, I agree with Ellen. It is unnecessarily confusing. Don't you think so?
I guess as a person who kind of grew up with it and learned a lot about it, it's not as confusing to me.
Well, now you're lording it over on us.
No,
okay,
no.
Reed is smarter than everyone.
No, not at all. Yep.
Whatever you say, Reed, okay, you're in charge. You're smart. this email from Samuel in Cornwallville, New York. Do you know why at dusk the colors in the sky, especially around this time of year, appear with warm colors in the east?
Yeah, it has to do with just a lot of particles in the sky. So visible light is made up all the colors of the spectrum of the rainbow. And so what's happening is you have all these particles in the atmosphere, a lot of ice particles too.
Yep.
And so you get reflection of light. Red, your oranges, they have typically your longer wavelengths. So they're not hitting as many particles. And so you get those brighter colors because the other ones are reflected and refracted out. And so you get those colors.
All right, let's talk about sun dogs for a minute. And let's talk about not moon dogs, but whatever they call those, halos.
Halos.
Well, you see them at this time of year
very
often. And by the way, Reed Kisselback is here from News Channel 13. He is a meteorologist. And if you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551. So ice crystals up in the sky.
Yep.
And at night, oftentimes, you see the big, beautiful moon up there, and there'll be a halo around it. And I always tell my children, oh, yeah, it's going to snow. Last time that happened, we had no rain or anything. It was in the middle of that dry spell that we had. But what's going on there?
So, I mean, actually, the way you bring that up, that's common weather folklore, is one of those ones where they say you're supposed to get a storm.
Yeah.
Maybe within a couple of days, not necessarily the next day. Because typically when you get those ice crystals, they are in what we call the cirrus clouds, like those thin, wispy, feathery clouds.
And how high up are those?
Those are the highest ones up in the atmosphere. So those are typically the clouds that you see first before you see those lower altitude clouds push in and then the stormy weather.
Okay.
So what you're saying is that's I actually did this in my podcast episode with I did weather folklore with Tessa Bentulin and Stella Porter when she was still at the station.
Yeah.
And we did true or false and we went through that one. So that one we said mainly true because you have those moments where, like you said, you don't necessarily see it, but it's just when it's this cold this time of year, especially if it's cold on the ground, you know it's way colder up above. So you just have those ice crystals kind of there.
Yeah.
Nothing really there to form around it in regards to a cloud. It's just dry.
We saw another interesting, my wife and I look at the sky relentlessly. Mm-hmm. We'll often go out at night and take the air and we'll look up at the sky. So the moon was out and there were some clouds and they weren't cirrus clouds, but there were some clouds and there was kind of a slight break, but you could see colors in kind of a ring in the clouds. They stayed, even as the clouds moved, that ring stayed where it was. This was a light phenomenon.
Yeah.
So what was that?
That's probably a similar aspect of kind of like your sundog.
Same thing.
Kind of thing,
yeah.
But just at night. Yeah, a little bit more particles in place in the atmosphere than usual. You have enough moisture to have some lower level clouds. You most likely just had a really bright moon that gave you that effect.
Do you ever see a moon rainbow? I have.
You mean I've not seen it. What do you define moon rainbow as?
I mean rainbow with shades, basically shades of gray, white and gray.
Oh, I've never.
Did
really...
I imagine that? That was about 30 years ago.
I don't know. You could be right on that
I
one.
Think it happened.
I'm not
I
an
really
expert
do,
on
man.
The moon part so much, so that's cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. Reed Kisselback is here from News Channel 13. He is a meteorologist. He knows a lot. All you got to do is ask him a question. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Don't get too hip. That's Hank Mobley on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's weather at meteorology today with Reed Kisselback of News Channel 13. Things going well at the station?
Things going great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You going to get any more shifts? I know that you work most of the day and into the night.
I'm the fill-in guy a lot. So you'll see a little bit more of me within the next 2 weeks for sure. I know I'm covering for Christina Thursday, Friday this week. Paul's usually off right around Christmas time.
Isn't that just like the big stars?
That's so nice when the Chief gets those things, right? I know I'm lucky, though. I get a couple days off around Christmas, too. But I know the following week, I believe he has a lot of that off, too. So
now, Cayano's the Chief Meteorologist?
He is.
Does he have a crown? Does he wear it around the station?
No, I like to mock him. I like to tease him, though.
Really good.
Yeah.
Good for you. So the podcast, now you had mentioned this, and you can quiz me if you want on the folklore, but tell me about the podcast. I understand you're on a bit of a hiatus with that, but it may come back.
Yeah, I'm never shutting the door on doing more episodes. What happened with that was it was something I wanted to do for a while. And this is why I like working at 13, because usually whenever I come up to them with an idea, like the first morning experience or something like that, they just say, go for it.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see how it goes.
Go away, kid. Just
like,
do something.
Try it out.
Yeah,
let's see how
I
it goes.
You. Yeah.
And so this one was just, we get a lot of weather questions. I put a post up on social media. I said, what do you guys want to know more about? And I got hundreds of responses. So I tried to group as many of those questions as I could into a few categories. And then during the Olympics, I recorded a lot of those episodes. And then put them together and got them out there just trying to answer them all. But the goal of it was maybe you could listen to it on your way to work. Or if you have a quick 10 minutes of time, you can listen to something and maybe learn something cool out of it. But I try to make it fun, too. Make it a little bit more memorable. So when I had mentioned folklore with you, I did True and False with Stella and Tessa when they were...
All right, try me. Do you remember any of them?
Well, we had that... The one that you already got there. Yeah. Let me see. Woolly caterpillars, the different shades on them.
What does this have to do with weather, man?
It has to do with the winter, they say. Is that a true or false statement?
Oh, in what? They're more fuzzy or?
No, it's they're brown and black. So and they go back and forth. So if you have more brown, does that mean a more intense
winter?
Oh,
I'm going to say that this is false.
It is false. All right. It has to do with the age. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are some of those ones where it pops up.
What about cows lying down?
That one's false.
Really?
Yeah.
So if cows are lying down, it doesn't necessarily mean it will rain.
It does not necessarily mean it will rain.
How do cows get up?
You know, that's a good question.
I've never seen a cow get up.
I'll have to go out. We'll have to go out somewhere. We'll see. We can see how this
tip
goes.
Some cows?
Yeah.
That could be our next podcast. Tipping Cows with Reed Kisselback on, you know, when you do a podcast, do you have a set time limit like a broadcast? All right, Reed, you have 2 minutes to get your weathercast in.
I think going into it, you have an idea for how long you want the episode to be. But you kind of just, that's the benefit of it being the podcast. You can let it evolve into what it's meant to be, which is really cool with that. So I had, I think, a couple episodes that were only 5 minutes. It was just me by myself explaining something. I've had ones with a guest where it was 10 to 15. And the longest one I had was, I want to say, 40 minutes.
Then you don't have to worry about running afoul of the FCC. So you swear like a sailor on
well,
that.
Well, you didn't
right?
know that? That's one of the main reasons why. No, I'm just kidding. No, I don't do that.
Yeah?
No.
All right. This email from Mike. Yeah. Mike says, I'm curious about the rain produced by a hurricane around landfall. Is it salt water sucked up from the ocean, or is it freshwater rain from the clouds? I remember that Hurricane Bob rained salt water onto Cape Cod. And after a hurricane comes well inland and produces very large amounts of rain, where does that rainwater come from? These produce so much more rain than other storms produce, and that's from Mike in Rexford.
Yeah, so, I mean, when you have a hurricane, most of the time it's freshwater, just because you need the particles of aerosol, so the salt part of the salt water, to be used to condense and make a cloud.
Right.
And so all that extra rainfall that he's asking about, too, is just stemming from what came from the ocean. They're massive systems. And as they move inland, they now lose their source of water, their drive, and eventually they have to dry out and break apart. So
right.
all that moisture has to come out at some point.
Right.
And so the end result is what was up eventually must come down.
Very yeah. interesting. Okay. You know, there was this guy, Charles Fort, and he was from around here. Mm-hmm. He wrote books about, he collected strange occurrences. This is 1920s, 1930s. He wrote a series of books. I think he's buried over at Albany Rural.
Okay.
And Charles Fort would collect these strange occurrences, and among them were fish falls, fish that would fall out of the sky for no reason.
Okay.
Give me a meteorological reason for that.
Is he by a body of water?
Well, I mean, there's...
That would be the
dude's dead, or I would ask him, basically.
Meteorological explanation for that.
I mean, can fish be pulled up from a water spout and put into clouds?
Not put into a cloud, but they can get pulled up from a water spout for sure. If it's strong enough, that can pull them up, and then when it dries out and dies out, then it will fall.
We are talking weather and other strange things with Reed Kisselbeck today from News Channel 13. 800-348-2551 is the number. Before we get to the calls, atmospheric river.
Yeah.
It's something I hear a lot about now. It's something I never heard about in the old days. Is this new, or is it just a new term that came, or
Not
is it
new.
Always been around?
They've always been around. It's just that it's become a little bit more of a recurring term as—
So
I think as a society, we get more and more interested with the weather. And so the terminology that meteorologists have maybe used a little bit more behind the scenes as more public figures, maybe meteorologists come and talk or national news outlets or public officials come and ask. There's terminology that they hear
and they misuse.
That kind of sticks with them.
Yeah.
And so it pops up. And atmospheric river, more often than not, is actually typically not misused.
Really?
It's just more often not understood for what it actually is.
So what is it?
So it's a you kind of have to view it like a jet stream, right? You have those winds in the atmosphere, but this time it's just a large band of moisture in the atmosphere. And it's usually when we talk about this, we're talking about Pacific Northwest area.
Well, that's funny.
Yeah.
The reason it caught my attention, there was cold weather coming this way, and then I had seen on the map an atmospheric river going west. I always thought weather sort of came west to east. And this looks like this atmospheric river starts in Idaho or somewhere in Montana and heads to the northwest.
Hmm. Okay.
Or
so,
is that wrong? I might have it completely backwards, by the way.
That's a little bit more on the rarer side for what I would hear on that end. Usually what you hear is it comes right off the Pacific, right into the coastland. And once it interacts with the Rockies or the Intermountain West, then you start to see some significant totals. So, yeah, you get it. It's about like 2 miles wide.
Really?
So you get a lot of moisture that comes in, and in those spots you get like tremendous downpours. If it starts to push farther inland in the wintertime, then you get feet of snow in the mountains. And then you start to, so that's where that part usually comes in.
And, okay, so what's the altitude of these things? I mean, is it way high where the cirrus clouds are? Is it where the nimbus clouds are? Where is this river sitting?
It would be more so, I would say, closer to cirrus clouds, higher levels of the mid-level clouds.
Why would the mountains have anything to do in stopping them then?
Well, so what always happens is it's kind of like when you lift a parcel of air. I kind of view it as like you have this heavy box and you're trying to carry it up the mountain, but it's a really flimsy box. And so as you start to pick it up, it like rips. And as you're going, it gets lighter and lighter because everything's falling out.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like as you're pushing it up against the mountain, you're forcing it to kind of condense and cool itself off. So all that moisture comes out on the, that's why you kind of get that drying effect on the leeward side of the mountain, as or wayward side of the mountain, the other side of the mountain. When you go down, it's dried out.
Right.
You have a little bit of that dry patch, and then it starts to, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Well, I've been going downhill for some time, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Paul Caiano is the crown-wearing chief meteorologist. Reed Kisselback is the working man's meteorologist at News Channel 13, and he's here with us today to answer your weather questions. Paul is in Albany. Paul, go ahead.
Hi. Well, Reed is my hero because he, this time of year when the days start getting longer next week, he says the length of the days was increasing by 3 seconds from...
Yeah,
and he's finally got Paul Caiano to start doing that. He does it this time of year a little bit, but yeah, I can't wait for the days to get longer. So
me too.
Thank you, Reed. But that's
no problem.
In truth, he had not much to do with that.
No, I like to say that part too. I've been looking forward to next week too, with starting to get a couple extra seconds.
Yeah,
so thanks,
buddy.
Paul. Yeah.
What's your question, Paul?
Well, it's a follow up to Jason Goff, who got too scientific on me when he was on, and also a follow-up to the Science Forum. My eternal question about, can you predict frost or dew, especially this time of year, like I called last week about the frost on the windshield. Is there something that you know, like there's precipitation probability, things like that? Is there a probability of getting frost in your windshield? Or I do all these outdoor gigs in the summer where I don't want to have our instruments exposed to heavy dew. But is that like totally random? Well, I shouldn't say totally random, but is there any way possibly to predict frost or dew?
That's a good question, Paul.
Yeah.
First of all, Paul, you made me nervous because Paul Caiano said he was going to call me and harass me.
Did
he
really?
Said Paul, I was like, oh my God, it's
all
Paul.
Right. All right,
but
Caiano.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate this one here. So, Yeah, so, I mean, there's no specific, we don't have, like, a pops for frost. Typically, we look at the relative humidity outside, the dew point, as well as just the temperature outside. And if your dew point and your overnight low are very close together, typically is a sign that you could see some frost or some dew form on the grass. So when we make our forecasts, we'll look for that, except for when we kind of expect that you're going to know that you'll have frost on the windshield for like this time of year. Normally you'll wake up, you'll have some frost. On
yeah.
So when you get to the first part of the season, you kind of look for that and just say, hey, you might have some patchy frost. Some of you might wake up and have frost. Some of you might not. So if your question's for specific locations, more likely not, because the temperature is so fluid over our region, but I can kind of give you a ballpark area. And that's kind of like the same thing that the Weather Service does when they have those frost advisories out.
Yeah.
They're like, most likely this spot, these areas will have that chance for frost in comparison to everywhere else.
Paul.
So they can't do like a, for example, I look at the National Weather Service hourly graph forecast, which is really wonderful.
Yeah, shows, great tool.
But, you know, like, yeah, it shows those little green grass bars for rain and blue for snow and all that. And I live by that. But why don't they do one for frost?
Yeah, why not?
I guess it's not so important to people. Yeah.
I think the priority-wise, I think they try to go for a little bit more in regards to hazardous.
Yeah.
And not to say anything on your equipment. I get that part for sure, because
yeah.
I would hate to see that get damaged too. But I think they view it more so as a hazard, because I know also if you're looking at that same tool, you have the option to select fog or not. And so that's kind of where people want to, if they're heading out, the factors that you look at with that are the temperature, the cloud cover, the wind speed and direction. You get the rain chances, you get the snow chances. They'll throw you the thunderstorm chances in there, or you could select fog in there too. So I think that's why frost...
Okay.
Maybe dew points not factored in there as much, just because I think they're going for a little bit more of a higher.
I guess I'll never get that answer.
You know, Paul.
I'll
yeah,
never
sorry.
Have the exact answer.
That's my best estimated guess for you. I hope that one helps, though.
Okay.
Yeah, Paul. No,
yeah,
no one likes frost as much as you. You are definitely the frost aficionado. Hey, man. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. If you have a weather question for News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback, let's talk about. All right, you're probably sick of hearing this, but artificial intelligence,
yeah,
it's in the news, believe it or not. It's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a show on New Year's Eve with, the show is going to be AI-generated predictions for the next coming year.
Okay.
Okay. Jim Hendler from RPI is going to be on.
And well, that'd this be fun.
Yeah. But in what you do,
yeah.
These are predictions that mean something. Are you guys using artificial intelligence anymore now these days, or is it coming? Is it a thing?
I think at the current moment, we're not using it as much. There's studies being done with it to see how it can improve our forecasting capabilities, but a lot of that, it hasn't really been published just yet out for public use,
yeah.
Or for my sector at least to use.
When they have these models for hurricanes, and there, how many models now?
There's three, five, ten.
There's way more than that. There's the European model.
It's kind of like, you ever see the spaghetti plots in the news?
Those
are all the different models that you can look at. So, yeah.
So when they do these models, they're basically doing what artificial intelligence does by hand, right? You're looking at all these different data points and then making projections, right?
To an extent, yeah. I think artificial intelligence would be trying to look for the method of, we have what all this is available to us. How can we use what we currently have to make it better? Whereas right now, where we're out, this is what we have available to us. Based off of what we see, this is what we can tell you what's going on. And so I think that's going to be the route that we see with AI, in our field at least, is how can we better improve the forecasts / how can I create a better forecast with AI?
Is your union concerned about this?
Not yet, no.
No? They will be. I mean, the longshoremen are already.
I feel like everybody will be at some point just because of the way that the amount of potential that AI
we'll
has.
We'll be out of a job, man. We'll all be just sitting around.
Hopefully, we'll be able to afford the cost of living then.
We'll find out. All right, this email came in from James. Anyone who has ever shoveled snow knows that not all snow is the same. Sometimes we get that light and fluffy snow.
Yeah.
Other times we get to shovel heavy, wet, heart attack causing snow. What is that causes these different types of snow? And is there any way that a meteorologist, such as yourself, can predict just which kind is on the way? Also, are some areas more prone to one type of snow versus the other? James, great question.
Those are good questions,
yeah,
James.
Really good.
I like those. Thank you. So to get those different kinds of snow, it typically has to revolve around the temperature and the amount of moisture in that storm. And so kind of like if you get an Alberta Clipper, kind of like what we had yesterday, it's just like a quick little dusting, so it's usually fairly light. It's not really heavy. But sometimes if the temperature is sitting right above freezing and we're seeing snow that's actually sticking, there's a lot of moisture in that. So that's your like dense, your heavy snow. But it's ironically, it's a little weird. We have a graphic that we sometimes use on occasion for snowfall and different kinds of flakes that you get. But it almost is kind of like a sine curve, or because it's when the temperature's above freezing, you can have these really dry, small, tiny flakes. As you get closer, it gets a little bit more dense and heavy, and then as you drop below it, it gets really light again.
Ah.
So it just has to do with the moisture content that you have in there.
Very interesting. The big, wet snowflakes are when it's right around that freezing point?
Usually right around that freezing point. Sometimes there's some outside factors. Kind of like for us, if we get some coastal storms, there's a little bit extra moisture just automatically there, because it's drawing in that moisture from the Atlantic. But in general, that is the safer route to put it, yeah.
What is an Alberta Clipper?
Alberta Clipper is when you have a storm system that forms up north in Canada in some of their provinces, for example, Alberta.
Okay.
And then it quickly passes down to, usually off to our south, and we kind of just get clipped.
And how quickly is quickly?
No. This is when we're talking about those tiny little snowfalls. So kind of like what we've seen so far this season, maybe like 1, 2, 3 inches of snow and then it's gone.
But I love that question about the type of snow.
Yeah, that was a great one.
Yeah. The number here is 800-348-2551. Our email address is voxpop@wamc.org. If you have a weather question for News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback, we're going to take a quick break here and we'll be back and check the email bag once again and get to your calls. Don't forget WAMC and your end-of-year giving, by the way. You can always make a pledge at WAMC.org. We love it. We love it. We know the fund drive is coming in a couple months. I'm not going to pester you about that. But if you, you know, want to make a pledge before the end of the year for whatever fiscal and fiduciary reasons you have, WAMC.org. Best reason is it helps us keep doing what we do. This is Vox Pop. Ray Graff with you. We're joined by News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback. Before we get back to the phones here, this is from Andrew. Historical weather is the subject heading.
Okay.
Do you know any good resources to find historical weather data for any given location? How far back do those records go?
That's a tough one to kind of describe over the on air. But if you go to the National Weather Service, if you're looking for just generic information on really just specific snowstorms and like the path that they took and things like that, typically National Weather Service offices have a tab in their website under climate for past historic storms. Sometimes you can click it. They have links in those summaries that you can click on. It has some of the data available for you to look at.
Yeah.
Others, if you go back into that climatology section, you can kind of dig a little bit deeper and it'll take you to another page through the National Ocean, through NOAA. And you can try to request that data yourself and see if you can get it and view it for yourself. Doesn't always work out the way you need to. Most of the time, so like here locally, our data goes back into the 1800s. Elsewhere, that might not always be the case. So
there was no uniform record keeping across the country.
There is no uniform one. You also have to think about too when they founded those offices. There most likely wasn't very much weather keeping in those spots.
Right.
Like here on the East Coast, we probably have a lot more just record keeping than we would on the West Coast, just based off of when our population got to those spots.
Reed Kisselback is our guest today. It's weather, 800-348-2551 if you have a question, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. When we were talking to Paul about frost, you had mentioned fog. This is just me complaining about when I do my newscasts.
Yeah.
There'll be times, and I'll do a few locations. We cover a wide, just like you guys. It's a wide range. So it'll say fog and 42 in Albany or whatever. I'll go up on the roof, and there is no fog. Where do they get the weather conditions?
So those conditions that you get for Albany are from the Albany International Airport.
That's the only spot.
That's the official site that they use for Albany. You can pull up other weather sensor spots in Albany itself, maybe from a New York State Mesonet site, maybe from the Weather Service. Sometimes they'll post here at our office up on Washington Ave, we have this.
Yeah.
And so, but the official one, whenever you hear Albany, it's Albany International Airport.
Fog really gets me, though, because they'll say, oh, foggy. And I said, well, I was just up looking at the sky.
It looks fine.
Yeah, everything's good. Yeah. Of course, it's never foggy here in downtown Albany. Let's go to Richard in Rensselaer. Richard, you're on.
Yes, I complained about all of the meteorologists do this. When you're showing what the weather's going to be, you've got all those different colors on the map, and they go zooming by, and then you stop it and talk some, and then you get it in motion again, and it zooms. They zoom on by, and then you stop it again and talk about it. I'd really like it to go slower. Like, why don't you give us like a second per hour? Because there's things, something will go over where I live, and, you know, by the time I change my focus to what time it was, you know, three more changes have gone by. So I'd like, why can't you have it be slower and not have to stop it to talk about it? Just have it go slow.
Yeah, Reed.
And let us see what's happening at each half hour.
Well, Richard, you have my sympathies. I'm sorry you feel that way on that front, for sure.
You need more time.
It boils down to time at the end of the day. And for the inside perspective for TV, when we talk to our producers, we are given a set amount of time to give the forecast for. And so if I went a second for every hour, I probably wouldn't be able to get through the portion of the forecast that I feel is more important to you guys. So usually when we pick those pause points, we try to pick them around really important times of the day. Your morning commute, right around lunchtime, your evening commute. Sometimes certain times of year, if you're going to be like now, if you're going to go holiday shopping, we keep an extra pause point for around 8, 9 o'clock for right around when the stores close. So we try to pick those points based on when we think the most population is out. And usually when we go from those fast in-betweens from maybe noon to 4, we try to, and it's a little bit more generalized, but maybe say showers start to move in the afternoon. You can see by 4 it's widespread. So I do sympathize, Richard, on that front. If I could have a second for every hour, I love that, but I just don't think we can with our newscasts.
Let me ask you a question, Reed. If Richard wants to write a letter to the management at WNYT, yep. where would he write that to complain about the situation?
He could probably pull up our station email on our website, WNYT.com.
Should everybody do that?
If you wanted to, you could. It doesn't mean it would change necessarily, though, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, Richard, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Yes, indeed. Write as many complaints as you can, because we love that in broadcasting, don't we? It's always such
complaints
a great...
Complaints are the best.
It's a great way to start the old day.
But I appreciate that one, Richard, though.
Let's go to Carl in Katona. Carl, you're on.
Hey, Reed and Ray. Nice to hear you this afternoon.
Great to have you.
Got a question for you. In days gone by, a long time ago, nice big fluffy clouds used to be all white. And now I'm noticing in the past 5 years or so that there seems to be like an underlayer, even of the brightest white clouds, that is either like gray or even maybe a little bit darker than that. And I'm wondering if that's a sign of all the carbon and pollution that's in the air. But even a bigger question is, I'm wondering, especially from a meteorological viewpoint, what kind of an event, what kind of cataclysmic event would happen when humanity finally understands just how dramatic, just how horrible climate change is? Can I be any more metaphysical than that?
No, I think it's a rather open question. We'll see what Reed says to that.
I'd be very curious to know how you feel about that.
All right,
you,
Reed.
You two are two of my favorite people.
Hey, man, thank you for calling. And let's stick on the line while Reed fumbles through this one. Go ahead.
I'm going to do my best. So sorry on that one. But in regards to the darker part of the clouds, that one's a little bit of a tricky question. I'm sure climate change could play a little bit of a role in that. There could be a little bit more aerosols in the clouds, and that's why it's just a little bit darker. Not as much sunlight can go through it. I'm also, though, thinking about what we have going on even out in Europe. And, I mean, Iceland, for example, had that volcano going off. There's a little bit more volcanic ash in the atmosphere.
True.
And so
you
could just be getting a little bit of that. It does travel, and so it just might take a little while to get over here, but yeah.
All right, let me time out here very quickly. Carl, we're probably about the same age. We're old geezers, right? So, you know, does our memory of the old days, the skies were bluer and everything, is it subjective? Are we remembering a time when the skies were darker blue and the clouds were whiter? I mean, is this perception, Carl?
To a degree, I would think, but what really brings this to mind is I used to have a job in Stamford, Connecticut, where we had these glorious big picture windows, and we were up 5 flights, and you could literally see the weather coming towards you, which was magnificent. But I noticed, especially when we were having very high pollution days, that one event really triggered me into this train of thought, was that I thought I was seeing a flock of birds coming towards us slowly. But as this mass came towards me, I realized that it wasn't birds at all, that it was actually a cloud that was just made out of carbon particles, which was the oddest, most foul thing I think I've ever seen. But since then, and during those periods where we had the horrible conditions coming down from Canada and that sort of thing, particularly, the big white fluffy clouds would have darkness underneath them. And I've noticed this when airborne up in, during airline flights, that certainly you see the brownness of pollution, but there also seems to be, it just doesn't seem as perfectly marshmallow fluffy as it used to be.
That's so interesting. I mean, of course, you and I are old enough to remember the 70s, and I mean, the air was worse. there was a lot of pollution. Yeah, you go by the cities, and there would be terrible smog, even in some of the smaller cities. So this is a great point.
How about L.A. with its chocolate sky? Yeah.
What'd you say?
I said, how about L.A. with its chocolate sky? Yeah, I remember that very well.
New York City and everything else. Hey, Carl, very quickly, Reed, we got to go to the next call, but what event would take people's breath away with regard to climate change?
Oh, well, I feel like it takes a lot of different... It could be anything, really. It could be a massive hurricane that just totally wipes a part of a state off the map.
Yeah.
It could be colossal flooding. It could really be any sort of event, but it would just be devastating.
Yeah.
It's a very basic answer, I feel like, but...
It's hard to predict.
There's going to come one, and you'll know it when it hits you. Like, that's the one that gets everybody's attention.
Carl, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback still awaiting Paul Kayano's prank call. Hasn't happened. And I think we might get by here. Let's go to Charlie in Westfield, Massachusetts. Charlie, you're on.
Hi there. My question is, do weather systems rise over a mountain and land similar to a motorcyclist going over a jump and then bypassing some of the areas closer to the mountain? Hmm. The reason for my question is I used to work in Springfield while living in Westfield, and one of the guys I worked with lived in Wilbraham, which is farther east, and it seems like he always got more snow than we did.
Huh.
That's a good question. So actually what you're talking about is what we call a snow shadow. And so that's essentially, it's kind of like what we were describing
with
that atmosphere.
The leeward side or the west?
Yeah, the leeward or the wayward side, depending on which side that system's coming from. So what happens is when that air mass hits the mountainside, it has to rise up over it. So it's forcing a lot more of the moisture out before it goes over the summit. Mm. And it dries itself out.
Yeah.
And so you kind of get this little bit of a shadow is what we call it, because it's just significantly less totals in those spots before it starts to pick up back again as it goes farther downhill.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the answer to your question.
Charlie, you want to follow up?
I think I understand what you're saying. It always seemed logical to me. I didn't know if it was actually the case or not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun one to see in real time when you have people that close to a mountainside and you can kind of verify like that. It's fun to see. That's why we like coming in on these kinds of events and just going like, look at the snow shadow that we have forming here. You go like two towns over and it goes from 8 inches down to like 4. And
yeah.
We're like, this is so cool to see. Frustrating for viewers, I know that, but it's very cool for us to see on that side.
Depending on what side of the line you're on. Yeah. Hey, Charlie, thanks a lot for the call. Aaron writes in about the conversation we just had with Carl and Katona about the clouds. Aaron says it's just the shadow of the underneath of the cloud.
Could be the shadow, too. Yeah, for sure. It depends on the angle of where they are.
Now, I know Aaron for a long time, and I happen to know that he's very smart, so I'm going to go with that.
I like Aaron.
Let's go to Gail in Waterville. Gail, you're on.
Hi. My question is about snowflakes. Recently, we had the effect where there was a whole bunch of them stuck together coming down, so you had these giant snow things falling down. And I had no idea what to call them. Is there a name?
If you're saying did it look kind of like hail is what you're going for?
No. No, this is just big snowflakes stuck together, so they just look like giant snowflakes.
Gotcha.
But they're all, bunch stuck together.
So we don't really have a name for that one. That's just one of those like snowstorms where there's just a lot of moisture and those flakes are just dense and heavy. And so when they start falling, they hit each other, they just kind of stick. They don't break apart.
We can call them gales if you want.
No, I called them congregate snowflakes, but
ooh.
I didn't know if there was a good name for them. Or
congregate snowflakes, I would say, is a great word for it.
That's really good.
You're on the right path with that one.
Okay.
All right. Gail, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it very much. Yeah, you mentioned those things that looked like hail. What do you call that?
So that's grapple.
Grapple.
Yeah. So it looks like it's hail, but if you were to like step on it or just pick it up, you could easily just crush it because it's a super cooled water droplet. It's the base.
I've seen those things. I never knew it was called grapple before. It's like scrapple.
Yeah.
Breakfast treat out in Pennsylvania. Let's go to Lee in Pittsfield. Lee, you're on.
Oh, thank you. How are you today?
Yeah, pretty good. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, I was just checking. I had a question that, you know, the United States is trying to do as much as we can, or almost as much, to help with climate change. But why don't we ever talk about China and their pollution and India? Huh. And it's like, until you get them on board, how are you going to do anything?
Well, you know, to be fair, Lee, Reed's a meteorologist, and what you're talking about is policy question. Now, Dan DeLurie is our climate change guy, and we missed a couple shows with him because he went to work for the White House for several months. But he is coming back, and early next year we will start again with Dan DeLurie, and then that'll be a perfect time to ask that kind of policy question.
Okay. No. Well, excuse me.
No, it's fine, man.
No, it's all good.
It's all good. Just make sure you call in when Dan's here because those are always fun shows and very informative. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. All right, Reed Kisselback. We got 4 or 5 minutes here.
Yeah.
If somebody calls in, that's fine. We have an email here from Yolanda. Okay. Thinking about the 70s, I was in high school in 1975, and we were learning about global warming and El Nino back then. I remember the predictions made for 100 years from that time. I'm wondering if meteorologists are projecting weather patterns for the next 50 years in the future, like what parts of the country will be in drought, flooded, etc. That's a climatologist thing, right?
That is more of a climatology thing. That is something that I wouldn't personally be looking at that. But that is something that people look at. They can kind of predict. They're like, based off of how things are acting this year, then most likely this should be what happens next year. And if that's the case, then the following year, you kind of just build like that. On that front of it, but yeah.
We get a couple people who write in, and very well-meaning, very smart, and they'll say, you know, why don't the TV meteorologists mention climate change in every show and the effects of the weather? And I try to say, they have 3 minutes. So how much time do you have?
Time. It can vary based on the show. But in general, for our first weather hit that we do, we have maybe a minute to tell you about our current conditions and what we're going to talk about later. The full weather part can range anywhere from 2:30 to 3:30.
Yeah.
And that's usually it. Sometimes if we have really bad weather, we can go, can you give me 4 minutes? Can we talk a little
bit
more?
Do you have to barter?
Yeah. Usually no, because it's like for myself personally, the producers even, we have like a clock that counts us down while we're in there in the studio talking. So,
yeah. We have one right here.
Yeah. For like myself, I talk usually pretty well to the clock. I'm like, if you give me the clock, I'm going to try to stick to it because I know that they've worked hard on the other aspects of the show and I want people to hear that part of it.
Right.
So when we have those weather days, I'm like, can you give me more time? They're always like, yeah, we can give you more time because you've always been good on the clock.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's brownie points.
So for me, it's like I get the brownie points. I don't get a hard time for it. Other people go heavy normally past the clock, and then they get a little bit more of a harder time.
Oh, interesting. See, this is the inside baseball that I never knew here. Our guest today is meteorologist Reed Kisselback, 800-348-2551. We only have about a minute and a half here, so I'm going to take line one here. It's Enrique. Enrique, you got to make it fast, my friend.
Hey, how are you guys doing? So I'm from Miami, grew up in Miami my whole life, moved up here a couple of years ago. But every winter is different. Some are hot, some are cold, some have a lot of snow, some didn't. Last summer, we didn't have any snow in the beginning. I predicted that we weren't going to have a lot of snow now, and now we do. In Miami, where I'm from, it's always hot and humid, so it's a little bit different for me. Can you explain that? Thank you.
I like it.
So just explaining why every winter is different. There's just a lot of factors that go into a winter weather forecast. We've mentioned El Nino a couple times. We have polar vortex. That's a factor in there as well. And so when we have these different long-term weather patterns, that can have a significant shift for us. For Miami area, when you have an El Nino or La Nina, your conditions are pretty just there and done. It's warm. It's more wet. Here we're kind of right on the line. And so we can have a La Nina year. We can have the warmer. We can have the warmer temperatures and a lot of precipitation, not a lot of snow. Another year, we can get just enough cold in that we get way more snow. And we're an El Nino. It's those effects that kind of make it a little bit more tumultuous.
All right, Enrique, we got to leave it there. We are out of time. You know, Reed Kisselback, one thing we have in common is that we're Giants fans. And this has been a very bad year.
It's been
very
a tough
bad
year.
Season.
I've been rooting for my wife a lot more now because she's a Bills fan. So
oh, does she play for them?
She does not, no. But as for her, I was like, if one of us has to be happy with the New York team, I'm okay with it being
Bills
you.
Bills are pretty good, man.
Bills look good.
Yeah, that was a heck of a game the other day.
That
All right,
good.
Reed Kiselback, when can people find you next on the television?
Always Monday through Friday on the noon shows. Sometimes, too, during the 4, 5, and 6 o'clock news, they'll have me out live talking about some stories.
Do you hate that?
It's not the worst
Do you want
thing.
To say, send the intern out for that?
It's always better in the summer. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, buddy. All right, so listen, we will see you around spring.
Yep.
All right, bud. Support comes from the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, offering creative workshops and tours for all ages. Open Thursday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Learn more at hydecollection.org. Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales, service, and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the greater Capital District for over 40 years, AmbroseLEC.com. And the Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, celebrating 2025 with a New Year's Eve dance party Tuesday, December 31st, featuring Jay and Molly with Swingology. AshokanCenter.org for tickets. Well, that's it. Thanks again to News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kiselback. Thank you for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our master controller. Thanks to Ed Rosen, our screener. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Travel with Jean Gagnon. She was on last month, and she was so rude and obnoxious and mean to me that I'm giving her a chance to atone. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 p.m.